This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Shout hallelujah, come on, get happy. Get ready for the judgment day.
Lots of things can put a smile on your face, a raise, a kiss, good health, or a good job, but if you're really feeling particularly happy, you might have your friends or neighbors and relatives to thank for it. Actually, you could even owe some of that happiness to your friends' friends and your friends' friends' friends, people you don't really know. While it may feel like a very individual emotion, happiness is also a collective phenomenon, scientists now say, and it spreads through social networks in a cascade of good feelings. Here to explain why our happiness is so tied into people around us is my guest, James Fowler, associate professor in the political science department, University of California at San Diego. He joins us from KUAZ in Tucson. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Fowler.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, now I'm happy that you're happy. But how does it spread through the social community like that?
Well, we looked at about 5,000 people over 20 years, and it appears that it spreads from person to person to person. So just as you said in your introduction, we found that even your friend's friend's friend, if they become happy, it significantly increases the chance that you'll be happy.
And the research seems to point out that you need to meet those people. Is that correct? You just can't hear about them.
That's right. So one of the things that we found in the study was that people who have closer social relationships and who are in more contact tend to spread happiness to one another more easily. So in particular, if your friend lives near you and you see them more often and you talk to them more often, it seems like the spreading of happiness spreads stronger.
Now, one of the most interesting aspects of this study that I found most interesting is that it's not your spouse that counts.
We don't want to make too much of these, best guess estimates for the size of the effects. We know that they're all different from zero. We know that there are positive effects, but we actually hammered down on this point because we do have a smaller effect size for spouses than for friends. But we can't say that difference is different from chance. And so, really, the way I would interpret our findings is that we have a variety of different kinds of relationships that happiness can spread through: spouses, siblings, friends, and next door neighbors.
It says, your study says your next-door neighbor, 34%, friend, 25%, close-living sibling, 14%, spouse, 8%. Not even in double digits there.
Right. But if you look at the confidence intervals, and now I'm going to really put your listeners to sleep, if you take into account how uncertain we are about these estimates, they overlap quite a bit. So we're going to need to do more work to see whether or not there's really a difference between friends and spouses.
Mm-hmm. You also learned something about popularity.
Absolutely. And this was one of the neatest findings, I think. People at the center of their social networks, that is, people with many friends of friends and friends of friends of friends, people right in the middle of everything, they tend to be happier than people on the periphery. And I think this is consistent with what we were finding with the degrees of separation results, because what it suggests is that there are happy waves flowing through the network. If you're at the middle of a sexual partner network, if you have many partners and if your partner have many partners, then you're more susceptible to catching a sexually transmitted disease. And in the same way, what we find here is that if you're at the center of a social network, you're more likely to catch one of these waves of happiness.
So if you want to be happy, surround yourself with happy people.
Not just happy people, but more people. You want to connect yourself mm-hmm. to the social network. I think that one thing that you might take away from the study is that you would want to get rid of unhappy friends. And that's not what the study says at all. I think you want to do two things. You want to connect yourself to your friends and family as much as possible, because people at the center of their networks tend to be happier. And then you also, if you can, however possible, you want to help your unhappy friends to become happy, because that'll go a long way.
Well, that brings me to the other side of the coin. If you're unhappy, does that mean you're hanging out with unhappy friends?
Well, we did find that both happiness and unhappiness spread, but happiness tended to spread more reliably. The effects were stronger, and over again in different ways that we modeled it, happiness seemed to do better than unhappiness in the way it spread through the network.
Mm-hmm. The connection with popularity, does popularity make you more happy, or is it being happy make you more popular?
Well, this is a really interesting contrast with our previous studies. So we previously studied the spread of obesity and smoking through social networks. And in particular, with the smoking study, we found that smoking actually affected the network. So people who smoked were actually pushed to the outside of their social networks. Here we find just the opposite. It's the network that has an impact on the behavior or the emotional state, not the other way around. Whenever we look to see what happened to people who became happy, they didn't change their position in the network. And we think this is because, you know, if you're sitting in the periphery of your network and you become happy, you're probably not going to want to change anything. You're going to want to sort of stay where you are, keep the same kind of relationships that you have, and so it's not going to have an impact on the network.
Mm-hmm. How can you tell that the happiness is causing other people to be happy and it's not just a random event that's going on?
Well, this would be sort of like studying the spread of flu by looking at whether or not two people are coughing. Right, and so we know that the cough isn't in and of itself what gets transmitted. It's the flu virus that gets transmitted from one person to another. And so I think in the future, what we're going to really want to nail down is what is it that's traveling through these social networks that causes us to see these waves of happiness traveling through the network.
Mm-hmm. Question from Stephanie in Madison. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to Science.
Hi, I really love this show. My question is this. I would like to know if it depends on the type of contact. Are these people that you see face-to-face, talk to on the phone, internet, letter? And even, you know, one of the things I've discovered that if I get housebound a lot, no matter who I talk to, if it's a, you know, from a bill collector to some customer service, I try to be as nice as I can, and that really, you know, have a really decent interaction and visualize a person at the other end of the line or whatever, and just... you know, kind of project that, and that's had a real big effect on me.
All right, let me get an answer. Good question.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's funny that you mentioned that because other people's research has shown that when customer service representatives smile, they get higher ratings, even though the people on the other end of the line can't see them. And so psychologists posit that what's going on is when you smile, it actually causes you to feel happier, and you transmit that mood to the other person over the line. And so I do think that happiness can actually spread through the phones, even over the internet. But our study, we were really limited in being able to determine what people were actually doing with one another. We knew where they lived, and we knew how frequently they came in for exams and who their friends and family were, but we didn't know more information than that.
So it's more than just a verbal communication. There are other kinds of communication going on here.
I think that's absolutely the case. And in another study that we've been working on called the Facebook Smiles Project, we actually find some of this online. We looked at over 1,000 students at one university and mapped their friendships and also hired an army of undergraduates to code for us whether or not they were smiling or not in their profile pictures. And as it turns out, there are clusters of smiling people online in these online social networks that look very much like the clusters of happy people that we see in the Framingham Heart Study.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because with the internet opening up all these social networks, it seems very ripe for these kinds of studies.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the toughest things about doing a study like this is getting the data. When Nicholas and I found out that they were keeping this kind of data at the Framingham Heart Study, we were ecstatic because we thought we were going to have to collect it just from scratch. But usually that doesn't happen. Usually, you know, these longstanding studies, they don't ask people, who is your best friend? But now we have all these online social networks where the network already exists, and researchers are already using this platform to try and see if they can now even do interventions in these already established networks to see what happens in terms of these effects that flow from person to person to person.
Well, sticking with the Framingham study for a moment, is there any other great data to be mined that you're working on here?
Right. So we have six studies. So three have been published at this point. We have three more in the works. One is on the spread of drinking behavior. One is on the spread of loneliness, and that's with John Cacioppo. And then one on the spread of depression. And the depression paper and the alcohol paper are with Niels Rosenquist.
Mm-hmm. And when we might see those?
This next year. I'd love to come back and talk about them.
Hey, do you expect any surprises on those, like you were surprised on this?
Well, we actually already know the results of those.
Oh, come on. You can give us a little hint. There's no one just you and me here, Doc.
Let me give you sort of a broad overview, and we're going to be writing about this in our forthcoming book called Connected with with me and Nicholas Christakis.
What's the name of it?
It's Connected. So what we find, what we're finding is that first of all, we're finding this general phenomenon that these effects flow out to 3 degrees of separation to your friend's friend's friend and no further. And so we know that for example, that most people are connected to other people by an average of 6 degrees of separation. And so these effects are traveling about halfway through the network, and it seems to be a robust phenomenon.
Wow.
And so that's one thing that we're starting to see across all of these studies. Another thing that we're starting to see is that there's a real difference between behavior and emotions. So behavior is obesity, smoking, and drinking, the emotions or the loneliness, happiness, and depression papers. And it seems like the behavior flowing through networks doesn't depend on distance. And so we think that really what's happening with behavior is we're adopting social norms, whereas with emotions, we really need constant contact in order to really sort of catch the emotions of the other people that we're interacting with.
And that's why they had to be either knowing one another, seeing face to face, or be their next door neighbor was having the highest effect on them.
That's correct. So even next door neighbors seem to have an effect here.
Hmm. Could you measure down the block how far the neighborhood would reach?
We did. I mean, we had specific information about these residences, and the interesting thing is your next-door neighbor seemed to have an effect, but the guy who lives on the other side didn't.
Across the street, you mean, or on the other side of the
Across the street, that's right, so within 25 meters. And this is actually really important for sort of technical reason. What this means is that it's not the case that, you know, someone's just building an overpass in your neighborhood and making everyone unhappy all at once. This actually suggests that there could be a causal relationship between one person and another, because there's no way that we can think of an effect that would be so local that would just affect you and your next door neighbor and nobody else.
Well, mark your calendar, Dr. Fowler, for coming back when those other studies are ready, okay?
I'll be happy to.
James Fowler, Associate Professor in the Political Science Department at the University of California, San Diego. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk about other kinds of social communities. These are the insects, ants, bees, other kinds of insects with E.O. Wilson and Bert Holdober. They're here to talk about it with us, and their new book is called The Superorganism: The Beauty, Elegance, and Strangeness of Insect Society. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.